on January 21st, he'll sit down in that Oval Office, and it won't be a campaign again. Stuff will be coming in over the transom, under the door, and through the window, and he'll have to respond to them. And it won't be a tweet. He'll have to deal with something that is going to have consequences around the world. And that's what I hope he gets at this point, at some point, and that I think his team is concerned about that as well.
Repetition compulsion. Why do we repeat the past? Why do we insist on repeating the past? Quote, if you can't repeat your past, why then are mistakes, which become habitual, are they not of the past? Isn't it repetition? I dare say, Marlena Krishna Raymond. Why do we continue to do the same things over and over again? Why do we not learn from past mistakes? We're going to get into this today, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for being here on The Fire You Can't Put Out, episode number 192. Oh my goodness, we're almost at number 200. It's crazy. I feel like, it doesn't feel like it's been 200 episodes. And of course, only about 160 of those episodes have I been doing by myself. Well, by myself by and large. But anyway, thank you so much for being here. Quoting here, humans seek comfort in the familiar. Freud called this repetition compulsion, which he famously defined as the desire to return to an earlier state of things. This takes form in simple tasks. Perhaps you watch your favorite movie over and over, choose the same entree at your favorite restaurant. More harmful behaviors include repeatedly dating people who might emotionally or physically abuse you, or using drugs when overcome with negative thoughts. Freud was more interested in the harmful behaviors that people kept revisiting and believed that it was directly linked to what he termed the death drive or the desire to no longer exist. I, like anybody else on this planet, am a creature of habit. I tend to have just about the exact same breakfast every day, just about the exact same lunch every day. I tend to follow, I suppose you could call them rituals. To me, it's really more of a routine. It's just easier to do these things. They don't necessarily take a lot of thought. About the only meal that varies throughout my week would be dinner. And that is because I generally, and I make a point of this, get to sit down with my family and have it. And then we have conversation. And it's not merely a matter of sustenance. It's not just putting food into my body at that point. When I wake up and I eat breakfast, it's a compulsion. I just do it because I know that I need fuel. When it gets about lunchtime, man, it's been quite a few hours since I've had myself something to eat. I better get myself something to eat right now because I'm going to need more sustenance. I burn a lot of energy. I don't sit still for long. You can probably tell just listening to me on this microphone. Then when I get home, it's a little bit different. But I tend to do the same thing every day. I do this show every week. This show is as normal for me as breathing or walking or singing. It's just, I do it all the time. It just comes naturally and it's comfortable to me. So where did things get uncomfortable for me? Things got uncomfortable for me when I decided to start a business. Never done a business before. All of a sudden, I'm filled with doubt. All of a sudden, I don't know anything about this. All of a sudden, I can't do this. Okay, I can't do this. No, I can't do this. Yes, I can do this. No, I can. Yes, I can. I can. Whoa, easy, easy. That's where things change. And your head becomes full of doubt. And you're not sure if you can do it. And then you do it, and it goes well, but then it doesn't. And dagnabbit, why did I ever do this in the first place? I should have just stuck to doing the same damn thing every day, eating the same food every day, you know, blah, 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 blah. But if you try something different and it works out and you learn from it and you continue to make it work for you, it can be oh so rewarding and it can take you on a completely different path in your life, a path greater than the path you were on before. And you go, man, why didn't I do this sooner? So you're not just doing what's comfortable anymore. And you've learned. You've learned from trying something, from doing something different. You've learned from your past. And going forward, you're going to do something even better. I get frustrated a lot. I say this with a degree of guilt because I didn't pay attention in high school. I didn't really start paying attention until I went to college. And when I started learning about history, you know, and even English, I took an English class and started learning about computers. This is the early 2000s. I felt embarrassed that I go, wait a minute, I really should just know all this stuff. But prior to that time, prior to going to college in the early 2000s, I did not really didn't pay attention to politics or history or any of it. I've spent quite a bit of my free time since that point learning as much as I can. And so I now have an idea of where we came from, how we got here, the mistakes we and other countries have made in history. And what I've learned is why it's so important to learn your history. I remember being a young man, an ignorant young teenager, and I'd come home and I'd go, why do I got to remember these dates? Huh? Why do I got to remember these lessons? Why do I got to know what some dead guy did? I said that. I was a dumb ass kid. I actually said that. Why do I got to know what some dumb guy did? And here's why. Because human beings don't change. So the way the world looks now, it certainly is quite a bit different than it looked, say, 500 years ago when there were nothing but Indians here. Native Americans looks different from what it did, say, 200 years ago, you know, 230, 240 years ago, whenever it was when the country was founded. It looks way different than then, you know, in the 1920s. I mean, all these times looked different. But humans remain the same. And we tend to do the same stuff over and over again. And when we come to a natural point, it tends to carry us to another point. So it's important to learn what humans do and why they do it. Because they're gonna do it again. The old saying about there's nothing new under the sun, there really isn't. I'm fairly certain that if there is a God, that he is bored. Because he watches the exact same movie every 80 years. Because that's about how long it takes us to repeat our history. About every 80 years. When the person who was alive during the last atrocity dies, the next atrocity becomes inevitable. And this is why it becomes so important to learn about your history, to learn what your people did, why they did it. The Iroquois Confederacy, the Native Americans, one of the Native American groups, they always had in mind what they called the seventh generation. Everything that they do right now, they look out seven generations. They say, when we do this now, how is it going to affect generations several generations out? No, seven generations out. We plant this tree. Yeah, perhaps we will not have shade. Perhaps we will not have food. Perhaps we will not have wood for warmth. But our people, several generations down the road, will have food, will have shade, and will have warmth. We do things for that reason. We are not merely thinking of ourselves when we do something. So where am I going with this? Here's what we're doing now. Everything that we seem to be doing goes like this. How do I want to feel now? What do I want right now? With the election of one Donald Trump to the White House, what we have is the doomsday clock has moved forward another minute. And the doomsday clock is that much closer to midnight. And of course, when it hits midnight, that's ideally. And I mean, obviously, scientists came up with the doomsday clock, which means that it means absolutely nothing to most Republicans and to this entire administration. But when it gets to midnight, that's it for human existence. That's the sixth mass extinction. That's exactly what's going to happen. And this is not doomsday Melvin talking. Obviously, I work to live in a sustainable way. I am one of those people that thinks several generations out. I am one of those people that does things right now, not because I'm so concerned about it benefiting me. If I get the benefit, great! Yay! I get the benefit too. But if I don't get the benefit, I feel good knowing that down the line somebody else is. When I do good for another person, you know, so say I give money to charity or something like that. I'm not merely, you know, I don't want to follow the charity around, watch them spend the money, watch somebody get help to feel good about it. I give the money, and in good faith, I say something good is going to happen with it. Somebody's day is going to be better because of it. Somebody's belly is going to be full because of it. Somebody's going to be warm because of it. You know, somebody's going to have fresh water because of it. And that's why I do things, because I'm not just a citizen of this country. I'm a member of this planet. And what we've decided to do with the election of Donald Trump, with the election of the entire Republican Party, is we have decided to forget all of our history. We have now returned to a time where we look at other people, black people, Mexicans, Muslims. We look at them as those people, as those other people. And we don't see the danger in that. We don't see them as Americans. We see them as those people. We see them as the invaders. Slavery was an economic system, plain and simple. You know, we say that, oh, they just did it because they're black. And to a degree, that's true. But it was an economic system. A lot of, you know, a lot of wealthy people. I mean, I don't think folks realize this. Most people did not own slaves. Most people did not own slaves. Yeah, you had to have some significant means in order to own a human being or many human beings, because slaves were bought and sold. And so these very wealthy people bought these slaves, made them do work, benefited from their labor, and then did not pay for it. They would beat their slaves, they would rape their slaves, and if the slaves got too uppity, uppity was the word. You know, if the slaves, they talked back, you know, they got too much attitude, they would do what they call sell them down the river, which meant they would send them south, where they were even harsher on slaves. But wait a minute, if barely anybody owned slaves, well, then why was everybody so enamored with the idea of slavery? Why did everybody love slavery? Why do people to this day carry around, wave proudly, and wear the Confederate flag to this day when there's no other reason to wave the Confederate flag other than to say that you can't get over the fact that the South lost? Why? Because in history, there's always been a group of people who were willing to protect the upper class, not because they themselves were the upper class, but because they thought that someday perhaps they could be. If they just protected the upper class, they too someday could join the ranks of the upper class. And the easiest way to separate people, and by the way, we're all the same. We're all in this together. We all benefit. We all rise together. We all fall together. The best way to separate people, and I've mentioned this on the show before, you and I, and I don't care if you're a Democrat or a Republican or a Libertarian, or it doesn't matter. You and I have the exact same economic interest. I'm assuming, of course, that the person on the other end of this microphone, the person who's listening to the show, of course, I'm assuming that you work for a living. Okay, if you don't work for a living, I'm sure glad you listen to the show, but obviously this message isn't for you. If you're at the other end of this mic, if you're not at the other end of this mic, because I'm recording at night right now and you're working the swing shift or you're working the graveyard shift somewhere. You know, if you're on the East Coast, you're probably working the graveyard shift somewhere and you're not listening to the sound of my voice right now. You and I still have the same economic interest. So what's the best way to divide us? The best way to divide us is to say, look at those people. You know who I'm talking about. You look right here. You know who I'm talking about. Those people. Right? Yeah. Those ones. Uh-huh. Yeah. The Mexicans. Those ones. Those people. I'm making air quotes. You can't see it. Those. Yeah. The Mexicans. The black people. Those people. Yeah. Those people. The Muslims. Those people. And the danger of disconnecting other folks who are really the same as you. I mean, these are pigments in our skin. It's nothing. But we're once again being separated based on that because there's an economic system at stake. And that economic system is based on the continuation of slavery. We have slavery in the U.S. Oh, yes, it's true. But we've also made slaves out of other people in other countries. We've made slaves out of the Mexican people. We've got cheap manufacturing going on in Mexico. That's what's happening with Carrier right now. When the union that oversees the carrier workers, that represents the carrier workers in Indiana, you know, they got the union to the table. They said, look, if your people are willing to work for less than minimum wage, which is under $7 an hour, if your people are willing to work for under $7 an hour and get no benefits, well, then Carrier will stay here in America. And the union leaders, what? They can't survive on that. And he goes, well, they can in Mexico, so bye. And I know Trump gets a lot of credit for saving those jobs, but they had to give millions of dollars to Carrier. And I promise you, Carrier may stay here for another year or two for, you know, and by the way, this is just some of the jobs, but they're not going to stay permanently. They stay because they got paid. They kept some jobs here because they got paid to stay. Obviously, what's at stake here is another economic system. And you and I, are being told to look at each other as those people. You and I are being separated for the sake of another economic system. And this time, once again, it is the fact that the upper class, you know, the men that own the manufacturing, they would like to very much keep their slavery, thank you very much. And they've got you and I side-eyeing each other. The danger with that is that right now, thousands of hate crimes, either reported or unreported, are being carried out. And a lot of those hate crimes that are being carried out are being carried out in Trump's name, right? The people carrying out the attacks will say Trump's name. They'll attack a Muslim or they'll attack a Mexican and they'll say, Trump's going to get you out of here. And we don't see, for whatever reason, how awful that looks. We're better than that. And yet, that's the kind of thing that we're doing right now. And it's not in our economic interest. 63 years ago, Emmett Till was brutally murdered, tortured, and his body was dumped in a lake or a river. I can't remember which one. And the reason I remember is because he was a young man. You know, he's like his early teens, you know, somewhere. I mean, he was a kid. And the reason he was murdered, and I'm not going to give names here, he was murdered by the husband of a woman who said that Emmett Till whistled at her. This is 63 years ago, so we're in 2017 right now. And what happened was, so her husband and another guy, two white men, went to trial for the murder, and they were acquitted. Not enough evidence. And of course, the husband that did the murdering, along with a friend of his, went to the media and said, hey, it had to be done. He whistled at her. You can't do that to a white woman. Because that was the attitude, right? Whites were in charge, and African Americans, they were the other, and they better know their place. So where are we at now? Well, 63 years later, that woman who said she was whistled at is still alive. She recently gave an interview to Vanity Fair, and she's long divorced from that husband who carried out that murder for her. She got married again and divorced again. I believe she's on her third husband now. And in the interview to Vanity Fair, she said, I made that up. Didn't happen. She said she exaggerated parts of it, which it goes like this. It means it never happened. But when she says it, by the way, I can't tell what's in a person's heart by reading their words generally. You know, you don't hear tone, you don't hear voice inflection or anything like that. But just from the words I read on the page, and obviously it's subjective, it didn't seem like there was a lot of remorse. Perhaps she's in her upper years and she knows that, you know, death is right around the corner for her. And maybe she's, as my wife would say, she's pretty certain she's going to go to hell. So she's just trying to do some good right now. This young man was murdered. And now she gets to just, everyone knew it. And the murderers went free. And all these years later, she said, that didn't happen. And that's the danger of turning people into the other. And we're doing it again. And of course, we don't have an Emmett Till. Another Emmett Till, yet. A lot of hate crimes are being carried out right now because people in America have been told the reason you don't have a job is because of what the Chinese did, completely omitting the fact that especially if you have a Republican congressman, right, there's some Democrats that went along with it, but it's by and large Republicans. All these trade deals, if you believe that these trade deals cost you your job, you need to look to your Republican congressman. Because all of these deals were opposed by a majority of Democrats and supported by a majority of Republicans. And now that these and I understand that NAFTA was signed by Clinton. Fine. Shouldn't have happened. Okay. But in Congress, when it was passed, it was supported by a majority of Republicans. Permanent normal trade relations with China, mass Republicans. Right? We're not going to get the latest one, which of course is the TPP, you know, because the Trump administration said that they're not going to support it. And I suppose I'm glad for that. But you got to understand, it's not those people. It's not the others that your jobs have gone to China. You can't blame the Chinese people. They're doing the work that's being handed. Their communist country has made slaves of them. And we are merely supporting that slavery by sending our jobs over there, sending manufacturing away from America. Same with Mexico. They've decided to enslave their people. And we're okay with that because we're going to get cheap goods. But now that the jobs are gone, there's no manufacturing here. You can't walk into a store, flip something over without seeing made in China, made in Thailand, made in you know, wherever. You can't, and it's frustrating because you go, this could be made right down the street. Why isn't it? And what the politicians say to us, the Republicans, I'm not going to lie about this. It's those people. No. Not the rich white Republicans that fought for those deals. Not the manufacturers who paid millions in lobbying fees to get those deals. No. Not them. Don't focus your hatred and anger at them. Because if you do that, you're going to vote against them. And if you vote against them, well, you might just get your jobs back here in America. Bernie ran on trade and still couldn't get the Democratic nomination for any number of reasons. And it wasn't as much the people as it was the Democratic Party themselves. They put the thumb on the scales for Hillary Clinton. Not going to relitigate that the primary, though. And so we go into the election. Hillary eventually starts talking about trade, but it's nowhere near as long as Donald Trump talked about trade. And who knows if he really won or not. We know that millions of people were wiped off the rolls. But now that he is president, people say, hey, the trade deals, get us back our jobs. He doesn't care. He's not going to get your jobs back. He doesn't care. He's not going to bring manufacturing home. Those politicians, you know, that were bought, they're still there. The people that bought them. Donald Trump is one of the people that bought those politicians. All of Donald Trump's crap is made outside of America. Dude, his ties, his hats, his shirts, they're all made outside of America. He's brought some of that manufacturing home. I'm pretty sure that the Make America Great Again hats are now made here in America. But that was because of the embarrassment of people flipping those hats over before and seeing that they're not made here. It's an economic system, and we're all being turned against each other in the name of this economic system. And it's not going to make you or I any better. It's simply going to protect the masters of the universe.
If you're tired of arguing with strangers on the internet, try talking with one of them in real life.
There's a lot of back and forth happening online right now. Who cares? It's no good. It's not going anywhere. Right? Those are our bubbles, by and large. And never ever has a problem been solved by people fighting on the internet. Let me ask you, you at the other end of this microphone, and you can just talk to the speaker or your headphones or whatever you're listening to me on right now. How do you feel? Honestly, how do you feel about the election? Did you get the outcome that you wanted? If you got the outcome that you wanted, well, then I think it's time for you to go. You're probably late for a cross burning or something. But if you did not get what you wanted out of the election, let me ask you this. What are you doing about it? Are you doing anything about it? You're probably folding your hands and looking around. Melvin, I can't do anything. The Republicans have the House. The Republicans have the Senate. Republicans have the White House. Pretty soon they'll have the Supreme Court. Yeah, they will. If that's your attitude, bucko, ask me what I have been doing since Donald Trump got elected. Go ahead. Let me tell you what I've been doing since Twitler got elected. I have been getting to know my House member, my congresswoman. Her name is Jamie Herrera Butler, and she doesn't like taking my calls. She doesn't like hearing from me. And that's good. And she knows it's me because nobody else is named Melvin. I recently put in an order at a record store and they go, well, when you come to pick it up, what name should it be under? And I go, Melvin. And they go, you know what? We usually ask for a last name, but nobody else is named Melvin. And I said, yeah. And if they are, they generally don't admit to it. So Jamie Herrera Butler is eventually, she realizes it now, but I'm going to be a perpetual thorn in her side for as long as she is in Congress. I'm calling her office all the time now, and I'm going to start playing these on the show for you, to show that they're happening, to prove to you that they're happening. Also, to kind of give you an idea of what it sounds like when you call your congressperson. You, no matter where you're at in America, and for people outside of America, just listen up. This is American democracy, and this is what's happening right now. If you live in America, you have two senators. Every state has two senators, and you have a House member that is supposed to work directly for your town, your area, your district, they call it. And Jamie is in my district. Jamie is a Republican, and Jamie has been mum lately on whether or not she thinks that voter fraud is a real thing. Let me tell you this right now. It is not a real thing, but she doesn't get to be mum. So I called her office yesterday, and I told the people, I gave them my zip code. That's what they'll ask for, because they want to make sure that you are from the district. I gave them my zip code, and then they said, okay, so what's your question? And I said, Jamie Herrera Butler, I'm a constituent. She's my congresswoman. I'd like to know where she stands on the idea of voter fraud. I said, does she believe that 3 million people voted illegally, like Twitler said, Trump said? And sort of silence on the other end. And I said, what's her position on this? Does she believe? By the way, it's a felony. Voter fraud, in-person voter fraud, is not only rare, it's a felony. It comes with a prison sentence and a fine. The fact that somebody would commit in-person voter fraud and risk a fine and going to prison for 5 years. This is what they're saying right now. They're saying 3 million people did this in the most recent election. And I said, where is Jamie at on this? And she said, well, I don't know, but you work in her office. And she goes, well, this isn't the kind of thing that we do here. I didn't realize it, but I was being lied to at the time. And I said, oh, no, this isn't. And she says, no, you have to call the campaign office. And she gave me a whole separate phone number. So I called that whole, and I said, okay, all right. So I called that whole separate phone number, and it goes right to a recording. Jamie Herrera, campaign office. And I left a message, and I never heard back. I contacted my local Democratic Party. You should be doing this. Contacted my local Democratic Party. I told them what happened when I called, and they said, nope, somebody was lying to you. That's not true. That when you call her office, either her DC office or her local office, and they got offices in both places. When you call either one of those offices, what's supposed to happen is they're supposed to, you know, address your concern, let you know how they're going to get back to you. If she sent you to the campaign, she was blowing you off. She was blowing off. She was lying to you. And they go, well, hold on. Maybe she wasn't lying to you. It's possible. It's possible that she wasn't lying to you. Let's explore that a little more. They said sometimes they have interns in there. They're new. They don't understand how things go. They're still learning the job. Let's assume that happened. Aha. All right. So now Jamie's going to hear from me every single day till she answers this question. And of course, when bills start coming up, I'm going to watch the way she votes. If she votes a way I don't like and she's guaranteed to vote a way that I do not like, she's going to hear from Melvin. My name is going to begin to burn the inside of her ears. She's just going to hate the sound of it. She's going to get to know my voice and it's going to make her sick. But it's not because I'm going to call her up and call her names and be rude or indignant. No, I'm going to call as one of her constituents. And by the way, emails do not work. Letters do not work. You have to call and or show up to the office or when they do town hall meetings. And all of these things are available to you. What am I doing now that Trump is president? My congressman is going to get to know me by my first name. And I don't care what your first name is. Your first name can be Sarah or Mark. I'm just saying names of people I know now. But your congressman should know who the hell you are and know how you feel about them. And they're gonna respond. But they're bad. They don't agree with me. They're not the person I voted for. Yeah, but they care about re-election. Now, when you call, this is very important. State your name. If you want to give first and last, fine. I just give first. There's no other Melvins. Your zip code, so that they know that you're a constituent. Give them your concerns. One concern per call. Don't make a list of crap and read down your list. They're not going to know. One call, one issue. That will be jotted down on a piece of paper. It will be given to the congresswoman. They'll say, here's what we're hearing from constituents about. This constituent would like to hear back from you. It's not likely you're going to hear from the congresswoman or congressman directly. But it doesn't matter. You are going to get a response. Because the only thing they love more than the power that they have is maintaining that power. They want to get reelected. And if they know that you're out there, let's say you're out there and you're making a big stink, right? You don't like the way your congressman is doing things. You don't like the way they're responding to you. Maybe they're not responding to you at all. And you decide to go to the local media and they decide to take your story. They put it in the local paper. Bad press. There is such a thing as bad press. And by the way, when you call, you gotta be polite. I've learned over, and I never sit still. I get asked all the time, oh God, Trump is president, how you feel about it? I'm over it. I'm over it. The mourning, the denial, it's gone. It's over. But the Republicans, they have, it's over. This is where I come alive. This is where I get to work. This is where I step outside of my bubble. Not that I don't already. And this is where you should too. You should be busy. I got to pick up the kids. I got to get to the grocery store. I got to get the car fixed. I got to get a haircut. Make time. This isn't just you that you're talking about. This is your kids. Right now, the Trump administration is scrubbing all of the government science websites. This administration has decided that they're not going to be friendly to science. Science is facts. They're not into facts. It's just not their thing. They don't really care about it. And as a result, climate change is going to get worse. They've decided to take everything that they learned about war, wars of aggression, the Iraq war, the Afghanistan war. They've decided to throw it out the window. We're 1 week deep in the new Trump administration. They want to bring back torture. They want to start another war. And now he's openly calling for us to go into Iraq and take their oil. He's saying it into an open microphone. And he knows the mic is open. He's saying we should go take their oil. It's our oil. How did our oil get under their sand? So what we're looking at over the next number of years is climate change getting worse. Wars getting worse. And it's not just going to affect you now, although that should be a good enough motivator, the fact that it's going to affect you now. But the larger motivator should be that it's going to affect your kids. Your kids' kids. And your kids' 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 kids. Forget how many, maybe that's seven generations, I don't know. Whether you benefit directly now or not, the future, quite honestly, is at stake. And I'm not being hyperbolic. This is your time. And you should be responding. You should get active. It'd be great if you went to your local, your Democratic or Republican party, whatever party you belong to. But at the very least, and they're very nice, as long as you're nice to them, call your congressman. Let them know how you feel about something that they're doing. Let them know that you are out there. When they hold a town hall, show up to that town hall. Tell them what you think of them. Right? And you don't have to be loud and boisterous and obnoxious like I am, but just show up and be you. Let them know how you feel. That's how we're going to affect change. It's time to get out of that bubble.
For too many of us, it's become safer to retreat into our own bubbles, whether in our neighborhoods or on college campuses or places of worship or especially our social media feeds. Surrounded by people who look like us and share the same political outlook and never challenge our assumptions, and the rise of naked partisanship and increasing economic and regional stratification, the splintering of our media into a channel for every taste, all this makes this great sorting seem natural, even inevitable. And increasingly, we become so secure in our bubbles that we start accepting only information, whether it's true or not, that fits our opinions, instead of basing our opinions on the evidence that is out there.
This from New York Daily News. The Democracy Index, quoting here, has downgraded the U.S. from a full democracy to a flawed one, marking the first time that the nation has fallen into the lower ranking. Other flawed democracies include Botswana, India, Japan, and Ghana, while much of Western Europe stayed in the full democracy category. Americans' growing distrust in their government. And let me say this, the government is you. You are the government. Don't let anybody tell you differently. You're the government. So if you say, I don't trust the government, you don't trust you, because you are the government. If you don't like the people that are there, then you should not put them there. You want them out, then you should see to it that they get out. And if everybody does that, you'll get good people in there. Government will be good. It will represent you. And then you have the government back, which is you. You can trust you. It's okay. Americans' growing distrust in their government, elected officials, and the media prompted the demotion. The Economist Intelligence Unit, which is a UK-based firm that produces the annual index, wrote in their report, while the dip comes just days after President Trump's inauguration, his candidacy and new administration did not cause it, the group insisted. Quote, the U.S. President Donald Trump is not to blame for this decline in trust, which predated his election, but he was a beneficiary of it. The report read, explaining that the same distrust that prompted the United States' lower democracy rating also pushed voters to favor a presidential candidate with no previous political experience, because we've been being told that the way to get things done is to get somebody in there who does not care and does not just wants to screw everything up. Like, that's better than somebody who's been entrenched and been in there for so long, which is wild to me. The Economist Intelligence Unit began producing the Democracy Index in 2006, grading countries on a 0 to 10 scale based on 60 factors, including fairness of elections, voter turnout, freedom to protest, and freedom of the media, among others. A nation has to score an 8 to be considered a full democracy, meaning that basic political freedoms and civil liberties are respected, while the government maintains a system of checks and balances and an independent judicial system. Now, you have to have an 8 to be considered a full democracy. An 8. Now, here's where there's some good news in this, all right? Just stick with me. The U.S. score fell to 7.98 in 2016, down from 8.05 in 2015, prompting the unit to deem the nation a flawed democracy. So we're just a hair below that line. But understand this. The new administration would like to get us even further down that line, because they're now attacking the media. They're now attacking protesters. They are arresting journalists and charging them with inciting a riot simply for covering the news that's going on. So the Trump administration would like to see that go even lower. But if you get involved and you start working, then we will see that start going up. We will no longer be considered a flawed democracy. I know I'm giving you a lot of homework right now, and I'm sorry, but the country, your country, the country you love, the country you live in, is at stake right now.
Well, I tell you, that is what is bothering a lot of traditional Republicans. Donald Trump gets big applause when he talks about building that wall along the border with Mexico. But what some Republicans are beginning to wonder is he really building a wall around the Republican Party, making it impossible for the party now to reach out and to try to broaden its base? Hispanics are the largest growing segment of our society, and Trump seems to be trying to run them off with all of this talk. He says that Hispanics love him, but the polls don't back this up. And I think this is the problem that is really bothering Republicans now. I got to tell you, Scott, if they try to run a campaign that appeals only to people who look like me, that is going to be a very tall wall to climb.
So this strategy appears to have worked out for Republicans because, of course, they won the most recent elections, but not without rigging the game. When Trump was telling us the game was rigged, the election's rigged. He was right. It was rigged, but it was rigged in favor of him. He said he'll accept the election results, but only if he wins. What the hell kind of crap is that? And he had all of his supporters convinced that it was rigged. And the media, oh God, they gave him $3 billion in free media. They put him on TV anytime he wanted. And the media's against him too. The media's against him too. What Bob Schieffer said there about building a wall around the Republican Party, I think that's very apt. I think a case can be made there that that's really what's happening. And just to further things for the Trump administration, Republicans have now moved forward with not just arresting journalists, but with trying to criminalize, and perk up here, trying to criminalize peaceful protest. This, according to The Intercept by Spencer Woodman, Republican legislatures across the country have quietly, they're not standing in front of cameras and shouting this stuff out. They've quietly introduced a number of proposals to criminalize and discourage peaceful protest. The proposals would strengthen or supplement existing laws addressing the blocking or obstructing of traffic, come in response to a string of high-profile highway closures and other actions led by Black Lives Matter activists and opponents of the Dakota Access Pipeline. Republicans reasonably expect an invigorated protest movement during the Trump years. So I want to get into one of those in just a minute. One of the things that seems to have bothered this snowflake of a president is, first of all, damn near nobody turned out for his inauguration. And as a matter of fact, about 10 times more people turned out the very next day to protest him. And the Trump administration decided that they get to be largely in charge of this. When the inauguration is about the new president, they get to choose whether or not people get permits. And people decided that, you know what, he won't give us our permits on that day to protest. We'll protest him the next day. And on January 21st, he was protested all around the world, and it bothered the hell out of him. People said that he was just freaking out inside the warehouse. Or what warehouse? He was freaking out inside the White House. He couldn't stand it. And it bothers him. The fact that he lost by 3 million votes, it bothers him. There's a story by Aaron Corbett over at Raw Story. The headline, "Nobody Wants to Buy Them. Frustrated Scalpers Losing Money Trying to Sell Inauguration Tickets." Yossi Rosenberg, quoting here, a 36-year-old Democrat who voted for Hillary told the outlet that he purchased two tickets to the inauguration from a Worcester County who sold them for $700. Rosenberg thought he would be able to sell them on the secondary market for at least double the price, but that task proved difficult. Quote, "Nobody wants to buy them," he said. "It looks like I'm stuck with them. I might even have to go." He purchased the tickets thinking that they would be in demand. He told Daily News, "I got offers before I got them, but then I got them and everybody balked." After receiving no interest in the tickets, Rosenberg advertised the tickets on white supremacist websites. According to the Daily News, there was no interest there either. "Somebody offered me $200 for the pair." Remember, he paid $700 for them. "I guess his approval ratings aren't that high, right?" According to a Gallup poll just 1 week before the inauguration, his approval rating was 44%. At this point, Barack Obama's was 83% and George W. Bush's was 61%. And at this point, after the election, a week after the election, he's at 36% approval rating. All of this stuff bothers him. And so he'd really rather just start shutting people down, not listening to anybody. So the fact that you can call your congressman, they've got a line where you can call them in D.C. or at home, so you can talk to somebody that represents them. That kind of thing is supposed to happen in the White House too. There's something called the White House comment line. And Barack Obama and all the other presidents kept it open for all the years that they were president. Now that Trump is president, he has shut down the White House comment line. He does not care what you think. He does not want to hear from you. So back to the Intercept story. In North Dakota, for instance, and these are the bills that are trying to criminalize protest. They don't want to hear from you. They just want to shut you down. Republicans introduced a bill in North Dakota that would allow motorists to run over and kill any protester obstructing a highway as long as a driver does so accidentally. In Minnesota, a bill introduced by Republicans seeks to dramatically stiffen fines for freeway protests and would allow prosecutors to seek a full year of jail for protesters blocking a highway. Republicans in Washington State have proposed a plan to reclassify as a felony civil disobedience protests that are deemed economic terrorism. Think about that. If you protest against the Republicans, if you protest against this new president, that's economic terrorism. Republicans in Michigan introduced last month, and then shelved an anti-picketing law that would increase penalties against protesters and would make it easier for businesses to sue individual protesters for their actions. And in Iowa, a Republican lawmaker has pledged to introduce legislation to crack down on highway protests. Quote, "This trend of anti-protest legislation dressed up as obstruction bills is deeply disturbing." This according to Lee Rowland, a senior staff attorney at the ACLU, who views such bills as as violations of the First Amendment, and they are. A law that would allow the state to charge a protester $10,000 for stepping in the wrong place or encourage a driver to get away with manslaughter because the victim was protesting is really chilling.
Well, Scott, I must tell you, I thought things couldn't get lower than they'd already reached in this campaign. I mean, the political discourse. But last night, it went even below where I thought it could possibly go. I mean, no discussion of the issues, but people arguing, screaming, hollering. It was like kids out behind the barn rather than a political debate.
Obama, in his last days as presidency, as president, gave a speech up in Canada. He was invited up there to give a speech by their government. And what was interesting is, yeah, he was speaking on Canadian land and speaking to Canadians. But there were certain remarks in his speech that made it pretty clear that he was already looking ahead. And his speech, a good chunk of it, became a commentary on the election that was taking place at that time.
Democracy is not easy. It's hard. Living up to our ideals can be difficult even in the best of times. And it can be harder when the future seems uncertain. Or when, in response to legitimate fears and frustrations, there are those who offer a politics of us versus them, a politics that scapegoats others, the immigrant, the refugee, someone who seems different than us. We have to call this mentality what it is, a threat to the values that we profess, the values we seek to defend. It's because we respect all people that the world looks to us as an example.
We are better than this, and we should not be turning our fellow Americans, whether they be illegal or legal. No human being is illegal. I understand we've got these divisions between countries, and to some degree, it makes sense. But to turn them into the others, to turn black people or Mexican people or Muslims into the others, is absolutely not American. And I don't want to question your patriotism, but I do want to question your humanity. If you think that this is a good idea, if you think that lashing out against other people, you know, based on their skin color, they're taking your jobs. No, they're not. Nobody takes a job. Okay. People accept the job if it's offered to them. But once again, it's being deflected, right? Your anger is being deflected rather than going after the crooks who are giving your jobs to people, you know, who maybe don't have a permit to work in America or who aren't even in America, right? Those folks that are setting up that system so that they can get cheap labor, so that they can make even more millions of dollars on the products and services. It's not the fault of the person that's working. But once again, they deflect that anger. They say it's those people over there. It's the brown people. It's that religion. It's this religion. It's that gender. It's them. When it's not. And we never go after the white, wealthy factory owners.
Canadians and Americans, allies and friends, now and forever. Thank you very much. Merci beaucoup. Thank you.
Listen to the end of this clip. It starts with applause. And there it is. Four more years. And then the Canadians began going into this chant of four more years. They go, you're a grown-up. A grown-up president. I mean, they always knew that. But Americans had decided we were sick of grown-up presidents.
If what you care about in this election is your pocketbook, if what you're concerned about is who will look out for the interests of working people and grow the middle class, if that's what you're concerned about, the economy, the debate is not even close. One path would lead to lower wages. It would eliminate worker protections. It would cut investments in things like education. It would weaken the safety net. It would kick people off health insurance. It would let China write the rules for the global economy. It would let big oil weaken rules that protect our air and water. It would let big banks weaken rules that protect families from getting cheated. It would cut taxes for the wealthiest Americans to historic lows. Those are the facts. And I know it sounds like a strange agenda for politicians who are claiming to care about you and working families, but those are their plans. You can find it on their websites. And when I hear working families thinking about voting for those plans, then I want to have an intervention.
And America decided that that's exactly what they were going to vote for. When I started doing this show by myself, and it took me a number of episodes to really get my bearings for doing this, when I eventually came up with a format that I liked, that was comfortable for me, that I was able to plan out every week, it was generally pretty easy for me to create a show plan, right, with audio clips and all the rest, and then stick to that, and then get to everything. I generally cover most, if not everything, that I put in my show plan. Here is what has happened since the election results came out. I sit down the same as I do every week. You know, I spend a dozen or so hours, you know, working on different things, pulling together stories, audio clips, and all this stuff, and coming up with things for this show. But what has happened since the election is I'm planning these shows, and I'm not even getting through half of the stuff that I planned to do, to say the stories that I planned to cover. And, you know, I run a business now, so I don't know if I'll be able to do it, but I'd love to put out two episodes a week. I just don't know if I can. Stay tuned for that one. So I'm going to have to go into another episode with all the other things that I didn't get to cover, because it's pretty important stuff. But here's what's happening at this moment. We are a week into the Trump presidency, and we were told, look, just give him a chance. Okay, just give him a chance. Give him a chance. Just give him a chance. And in his first week, he's introduced dozens executive orders. And he said that we should go into Iraq and take their oil. He didn't insinuate it. He flat out said it. He said that we should bring back torture. He said that we should have a Muslim registry. He said that 43,000 people a year are going to die if we get rid of Obamacare. Well, then let's get rid of Obamacare. 30 million people are going to lose their insurance if we get rid of Obamacare. Let's get rid of Obamacare. He has stated for a long time, you know, all through the campaign, that we should not touch Social Security. Social Security is going to be just fine. This week he said, you know what, maybe we should just get rid of Social Security. He's putting all these people in charge that promised to kill the jobs that they've been given. You know, one of the best examples has got to be Rick Perry from Texas, who, when he ran for president back in 2012, he mentioned three offices that he wanted, that he would get rid of. He got down to the third one and he couldn't remember it. He couldn't name it. God, what is the name of that office that I want to get rid of, because it's the government and I hate it so much? It was the Department of Energy. And so what does Trump do? Trump decides to nominate him to head the Department of Energy because he said that he wanted to kill the Department of Energy. So clearly he should be given that job. And then Rick Perry jumps at the chance. He goes, I'm going to run the Department of Energy. And so what Rick Perry thought the Department of Energy was he thought he was just going to be sitting around and giving handy jibbers all day to these oil and gas titans, right? Just thought he was going to be, you know, filleting these oil guys all day long. But instead, what he learned that it really is he's the guy in charge of nuclear weapons. He oversees our nuclear arsenal. He did not know that when he got nominated for the job. Now, he's not as interested in shutting it down because now he's in charge of something that's going to kill lots of people. We gave him a chance. He failed. He's awful. And we're done. So this, according to Mother Jones, the president is mad. Trump, because being president is seriously cutting into his TV time. Let me paint a picture for you. Maggie Haberman reports on how President Trump spends his days. His mornings are spent as they were in Trump Tower. He rises before 6 a.m., watches television, tuned to a cable channel in a small dining room in the West Wing, and looks through the morning papers, New York Times, New York Post, and the Washington Post. His meetings now begin at 9 a.m., earlier than they used to, which significantly curtails his television time. Still, Mr. Trump, who does not read books, is able to end his evenings with plenty of television. His wife, Melania, went back to New York with their 10-year-old son, so Mr. Trump has the television and, dig this, his old unsecured Android phone to the protest of his own aides. You guys remember that? One of the things that they said Hillary Clinton should go to prison for was using unsecured servers. A bunch of his people are now using unsecured servers. We'll have to get into that in the next episode. And I remember when Obama became president, and this was 2008, he was using a BlackBerry, but it was unsecured. It wasn't the presidential phone. And he didn't want to give it up. He loved his BlackBerry. But for the good of the country, he gave up his BlackBerry. Trump is refusing to give up his unsecured Android phone.
Listen, you even had a Republican senator saying you cannot afford to give the nuclear codes to somebody so erect. And as Hillary points out, anybody that you can bait with a tweet is not someone you can trust with nuclear weapons. Anybody who is upset about a Saturday Night Live skit, you don't want in charge of nuclear weapons. No, I'm serious. This is a guy who, like, tweets, they should cancel Saturday Night Live. I don't like how Alex Baldwin's imitating me. Really? I mean, that's the thing that bothers you and you want to be president of the United States? Come on, man. Come on.
Plenty of Americans heard that and saw that and decided that, yeah, that's the guy. That's the guy that should be president. That little snowflake right there.
Over the weekend, his campaign took away his Twitter account. Now, if your closest advisors don't trust you to tweet, then how can we trust him with the nuclear codes? He's unqualified to be America's chief executive.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to duck out. You know, I've hit my hour point, but I hope some of what I said about how we talk to one another, how we treat one another, how we see one another, I hope that some of this has stuck with you. And I hope you'll start seeing other people, you know, as human beings, you know, head and heart, just like you, you know, families, loves, hates, fears, dreams, all just like you, right? Economically in the same boat as you and not your enemy. And I hope that if the other thing that you get out of this is that you'll decide to get in touch with your congressman. And I'm going to continue, right? If you have not gotten in touch with your congressman or congresswoman yet, and your House member is the closest one to you, right? You can get at your senators as well. Definitely get at your senators, because those are the people that are going to either confirm or deny all these nominees that Trump is trying to put through right now, all these horribly dangerous nominees. But your congressman, your congresswoman, right? They're the most vulnerable. The House, every single member of the House runs every 2 years. And if you've got a Republican member of the House that is falling in line with the Trump administration, that they should not be there. As of November 2018, you should find a way to get them the hell out of there. But in the meantime, in the interim, you should make them afraid. Not by threatening them or being mean to them, but by letting them know that you're out there. And that you're watching them. And that you're not sitting silent anymore. And that you're going to get involved in your democracy. And we're not going to let them in the Trump administration screw up these next number of years. Because this is our home. This is our country. And we are just as in charge as they are. We're going to get things done over the next number of years. Please continue to stick with me through this whole time. I'm going to get you through this. You and I are both going to get through this. We're going to hold each other down. You hear me? Because I'm not afraid of this. I'm not worried. I just want you to work with me. I'm alive. I'm alive as anybody out there right now, because this is my thing. This is where I thrive. You thought I was something else when I had a president that I largely agreed with. Oh, now that I'm the loyal opposition, it is the fire that you can't put out, and it's twice as large as it was before. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here on the Fire You Can't But Our official home, tfycpo.podbean.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/tfycpo. You can listen on the go and just download the Podbean app at the iTunes Store or at the Google Play Store for Android users. Individual episodes are available for download at the iTunes Store or on Podbean. Just search for the Fire You Can't Put Out there. You can also subscribe so that you never miss an episode. Questions, comments, hate mail, or just a general statement or inquiry, you can email us at tfycpo@gmail.com. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, but also to keep an open dialogue with our growing listener base. So feel free to reach out to us. And as always, thank you for listening. We are the resistance. Resist with us. Rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin for producing, and a special thanks to you for listening. This is Melvin signing off. And now that I've woken you up, good morning.